some refugee things are covered quite a lot in media. Nothing's really changing right now. This is like, it's almost like nothing, but with transgender refugees. I've never heard anything, like never really read anything much about this. Okay, I wasn't really also digging very deep, right, for it. But it's nowhere in the news, nowhere.
Every war is like, there's always some more discriminated. In every war, there's always some more discriminated, which are trans or LGBTQ plus in general, which normally they are not even in one side, not even in the other, because no one wants them.
Fractured, a podcast created by Refocus Media Lab citizen journalists. We are in our studio in Athens, and this podcast is about the situation of refugees in the world, with our special focus on Europe. Last week, actually 2 weeks ago, Fracture goes out every 2 weeks, we spoke about the situation of LGBTQI plus community in Africa. We connected with people in Kenya and in South Africa. They had to flee their country, so they were telling us what was the reason for it and what is the legal situation for them right now. And today we're going to continue this subject, but with our guests here in Greece. So we have wonderful guests. Before I introduce them, short introduction, my co-host Rashid Ghali, as
Hello,
always,
everyone.
On my left side. today. In our lab, welcome very much. First of all, Julie Fernandez,
yes,
who agreed to come today to the studio and speak to us about the issues of transgender people here in Greece, but also in your home country in Cuba. And Moran Perez, who works with Safe Place International. Welcome very much to the podcast. For people who listened to us last time, they know that we cooperate with Safe Place International. They're nice, they're very great friends of ours. And today will be no exception. In the break between part one and part two, you will also hear from Safe Place International. Going back to the episode. Julie, we would like to start with you. You're a very interesting character to us. You came a very long way from your native Cuba to come here to Greece. Could you please tell us, how is the situation of LGBTQI plus community in Cuba? What is the legal situation? What is their position in the society?
Okay, thank you so much for the invitation. I feel really nice here. This is the first time in my life that I made one podcast. I'm very excited, but it's okay. I will try to be the most sincere person that you can know in this moment, because of course for me affect, not only for me, also for my community, the situation, because the trans community is the most vulnerable for me of the society, because I come from one communist country that the people not understand where we are. Of course, I didn't have one education about transgender. I start very young. My family know it that I was totally different. I come from a family with my mother, my father, my brothers. I have two more brothers. And when I was a child, it was very, very difficult for me, because I didn't have the opportunity to explain for my father what it happened with me. I feel like very soon that I was a girl, that I was not a young. I was not a boy. And I can't speak about that. I have a trauma in my life because I was victim of the violent sex for one member of the family. And I can't explain, I can't say my father was too much alcoholic and make violence for my mother. I was, between all of this situation, I trying to explain that I was not good because I saw me in the mirror and I saw other things because no concord with my mind. So after this violent situation, sexual that I had in my life, my mother decided to go with me in other city of Cuba for be more calm, little to forget this incident that it's happened. But she told me only that she wanted that I study something in the life, because if you come from one communist country, if you are black and if you are transgender, this is very difficult, not only in Cuba, it's on the world. And I can explain for all of us about the experience in Europe, because I was in many countries in Europe, and I have the capacity to explain what it's happened, because I feel that I have the most bad combination in the world. Black, trans, sex worker. This is very, very bad. A sex worker, I don't want to be sex worker only because I don't find the opportunity to have a nice job. I am a person that is studying one university, German language, gold diploma. I was in Germany for a study, the best student, the best tour guide, the best in my class. But for my gender identity and my sexual orientation, I can find one space in the society like a woman, that I feel a woman. So after that, I finished my study in this other city that I was moving with my mother. And of course, continue to explain, in Cuba, we don't have the opportunity, not me, all the trans, I will speak in general for the community. We don't have the opportunity to go a doctor, that I make here in Greece, to go to endocrinologist, to explain, to psychologist, to psychiatrist, to explain what it's happened, what I feel. You don't have the possibility to explain about sexual education, because our sexual education in communist country is only that man and woman, hetero. Also about the reproduction is the sexual education. The people from the community, no male reproduction in sexual. That's why it's forbidden, it's in secret, and it's very bad on the society. But that's why, again, sorry, I speak German and it's a little automatic. So, many languages I need to change. So, the people seeing that when they attack in Cuba, when they make demonstration or attack trans persons, they are making a cleaning in the society, because for this sexual education, because we don't have a project, we don't have the opportunity to explain, to speak, or open mind about these things. So I started with, it was very strong, my feeling that I feel woman. And like I said before, we don't have the opportunity to go to the doctor to explain, because many times when I try to do black, become a lot of bullying, become a lot of rejection for the people, for the society. And I decided to make for myself. The best was that I was in the capital of the country for take my study in the university. And there I start to make for myself the hormone therapy. I take more hormone, but it affected my organized too much, my body, that today I have many problems for all of this. But it was not a lot for me. I think I wanted to be, not now because I am a little fat, but I wanted to be the Cuban Beyoncé. Yes, it was my mind. I want to be a god. That's why I take many hormones, more hormones, injection. At the end, I decide that because I was studying, and you can't be in Cuba tour guide and trans. It's not possible, not only in Cuba, also here in Greece, because many times I tried to apply for one school, Senagos, Turgai school. He no accept me. They look for many pretexts that you need to have a C2 level in Greek. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand that, but no give the opportunity. That's why there are many projects that I will to. I study a lot of Greek because I want to make that. I want to broke this on the world, and because for me, okay, I had a normal economy for this work tour guide. You can show the country for the tourists, because it's not secret for the people that Cuba, the most increases in the economy is tourism. So the people from Canada come to Cuba for my vacation, holiday, from all the world, they want to go to Cuba for holiday. This is, that's why it's the most for the economy. But it's not, it was not a lot for me. I want to be tour guide, but woman. Obvious, when I start to take a lot of hormones, a lot of things, my body was changed, and it had many problems in the company. They attacked me, rejected me, many bullings. When I decide to make for myself more strong, I put my ass oil because I want to be this Beyonce. I put many oil in my ass. It now it's little. I have little afraid because it's bad. You don't have this. I want only in myself, in my house. I was not in one hospital for explain that I want this. I want this. As aesthetic surgery is not possible in one communist country. Okay, I made this in my house. Many trans in Cuba died because make without doctor, without therapy, without nothing. Many died every day. But the feeling is very strong to look for this woman figure. After that, what's the other step, the more strong step? It was that one to have breast. It was not enough with the hormone. When I decide to make that also in my house, with local anesthetic, or I pay for one crazy person that open you in your house with lidocaine, 12 injection, open and put. After that, the police start to persecute me because it's not possible. The aesthetic surgery is only for the women, not for the trans also. All people know me. My mother was a famous person in the city. And the police start to persecute, to ask me who made that for you. Every time take me on the street, come in the police station, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 days. It was really bad, terrific. I can't stay that. But the point that I decided to leave the country was because when all of this that is my life, that I want to change, start to affect my mother. Because I am a total different person, but the family, what can, my mother wanted to have a different son, but who can fight without that? Yeah. And when I saw that all of this start to affect my mother, I decided to leave the country. But my trauma was that for the best student, I take a visa direct from Cuba to Germany to study. In this year, 2070, only two students can go to Germany to study. I want one of the two. And of course, you go to Germany, and you see Germany, Berlin, and after come back Cuba, it is trauma in your mind. In Germany, I feel free. In Berlin, I look all the people free. No discrimination, can't say now, after. Can explain more because, but when I come back to Cuba, I can stay only in Cuba one year more, not more 1 year, because my mind would totally change. Again, the police start to persecute me, attack me on the night, because why you sit in this park in this time? What do you do? What do you make prostitution? Why? On this, I decide to leave the country. It's not a secret for the persons that the most bad passport on the world is the Cuban passport. Mm. For me, I've seen that all we are human persons. When you don't have the right to go in one country because you are from other country, for me, makes stress. For example, now the England embassy reject my visa because they don't want. Well, I am human. I want to have the opportunity to go and to know everywhere. Mm-hmm. Why you made the difference between the person, because you was born in Europe, you was born in America, you have off free, but the country is not the same for me. This, it's not a secret that the Cuban passport is the most bad passport. We have only three countries to fly. Russian, obvious, because he's more communist. This is a big mafia between Cuba and other small countries in Latin America. I decided to go Russian, but you go from Cuba, communist, and go to Russian, a big communist country, but with a lot of money, good cars, money. It was a change. I wasn't Russian. 1 year and 4 months. I was very good there, but the bad things in Russian is the weather and the language.
Putin. Yeah. So what was it? Yeah, and Putin. Let's be honest. Was it the weather that made you decide to leave Russia and move to Greece?
No. Not exactly the weather. Okay, but the weather made depression because every time when you see the Himmel, what is the name? Himmel?
El cielo.
When you see the sky dark, and Hioni, Schnee, snow, you know, Hioni, Schnee, near.
All connected, huh?
When you see a lot of snows, cold, start to make depression for you. The most bad in Russian was that you had the opportunity to find illegal jobs. It was very good. But the problem is in one space for 90 days, you are not more legal in the country. When start to come the problems. When you are not legal in the country, you can suffer from the people will not pay your salary. In Russia, I had the opportunity to be a sex worker. It was very good. I was working in teleperformance, selling the product in internet for a Spanish speaker, obvious, and for German customers. But the problem was when we discovered that I was not woman, maybe for my voice, I try many times to make more, but it's not possible because I'm very like this. They discovered that I was not woman. They put me out on the street immediately without reasons. I was looking after that, the teleperformance of the job. I was cleaning supermarket. It was very good. I found a family there. These people loved me, helped me, but the problem started when the boss no want to pay me because I was illegal. I was working 2 months without salary. It was terrible that after that I decide again to make this thing that I don't feel proud, but is the only way that I have, or is the only way that the society make for me. To decide to come to Spain, because for the language, it's my mother language, Spain country, I think I need to be more safe. I had many problems with the police in Russian, because when they saw black people in general, because in Russian there are not a lot of black peoples, they start to persecute, give me your documents. And after that, they saw black people, but woman is more dangerous. And black people, woman, trans, is a lot of things together in one package. They make me a lot of bad things. One time, they leave me in the snow without clothes, sex. It was terrible. In Russian, I start to feel what is the most difficult problems for the persons in the world, I think, is when you start to have depression and anxious, because I was totally alone. I am a person that also in the trans, it is very difficult to find the love. This is other things that affect hour that the men's in general, because I'm trans woman, straight. I love only men's. I don't try with women's. Maybe I will make it. Who knows that? But in general, they use me like a sexual toy. They don't show inside me that I am a smart person, that I am a woman for the house, that I am very clean. They saw only the big fantasy, the black transsexual with, and it's only this, and I don't want this. Also, it's difficult to find a relationship. When I have my appointments with my psychiatrist, she tried to explain me that also for the women it's difficult to find relationship, but I say for her, no, it's not that. We need someone, also you need someone to explain what it's happened, how you feel. This is the most that affected me, what started in Russia when I saw alone, without family, without boyfriend, without nothing. The depression is very bad. I started in me every day cry down. After that come the anxious, and the anxious with big symptoms. Many times I had heart attack in my mind. It was terrible. But I was little strong to try to go in one country where I feel safe. Of course, when I made my interview for Asylum here in Greece, they tried to ask me about the way to came to in Europe. I said that I came not in one airplane. I came not in one aerodrome.
Airport.
I came not in one airport. If I was born again, I need to make that I made to come to Greece, I will not make never. I was alone. I many times in the way I fight with a lot of peoples, and my life was in dangerous many times when I tried to be safe in one country that protect me, that helped me, because it was too much.
Why did you decide on Greece in the end?
I not decide Greece. I will tell you the truth. Now I am Greek. Now I love Greek. Now I don't imagine other life in other country that is not Greece. But I not decide Greece. I didn't know nothing about Greece in my school. Only that Greek for the gods, nice men, but not in general for the cultures. I didn't know nothing about Greece. But when I came here, I was not strong with my health. I was very bad. I was sleeping on the street. In the morning, I was making sex worker, many time fight. And the last strong that I tried to make was to try to go to Spain. And they catch me in the airport, the police. In this moment, I didn't understand, but now I I sense that they will catch me. But the problem was that they put me in one jail. But they don't know if you stay with women or if you stay with men. I was alone. Alone, totally alone. I was in the Proavlio patio.
Courtyard.
Alone. One hour a day. The depression and anxiety was doppel, more strong. But I can say something for the jail in Greece. This is something that always I will keep in my heart, is that, okay, jail is jail, otherwise is bad. But the person that working inside the jail was amazing. They are the doctors, the nurse, the psychology, the psychiatrist. They keep me and protect me like a baby. It was really, really good. After that, when they decide to put me out because they don't want that I go to the camp, Amigdalesa, with women, with men, they don't know. I say, well, oh my God, I come from one country that the people don't understand me when I'm here, and they also don't understand me. They don't know where can me put with men, women, what is this? The nurse for the jail helped me because I was sleeping 1 week on the street. And put me in White Psychiatra Hospital here. Senonas is the name. With Klimak, I am in therapy more than 1 year. And this is my other family here in this country. I can't imagine one life without my psychiatrist.
No.
Because the smallest, small things that I have, I go there. Mm-hmm. Many times I cry, I explain all for her, because this, we need some person that understand us. It's not that you will sit on her what I will say for you, no. Mm-hmm. I need that you understand my position. It's not a play, it's not a game. That the person want to take money with our history, blah, blah, blah. This is other things. But it's not a game, we are human. Also, I need a person, because I don't have a family. I need a person that hear me. I need a person that know what it's happened with me. Mm-hmm. And this other person is my psychiatrist. And I can't imagine the 1 month without going to the hospital because for the first time in my life, I feel a family. I feel person that... What is the problem? The problem is that the person thinks, many person thinks that you are was not born here. Mm-hmm. You didn't understand. But the language corporal is one. Mm-hmm. I don't need to speak a perfect language for understand when a person want to help or when the person is good or not good. And this hospital was very, very good with me. I am here now thanks for this person.
With this very, very powerful story, I feel very bad for saying that we need to take a short break.
I would like to say something before.
Yes.
I would like to say to Julie, you are already a god. I really, your courage, what makes you a god? A goddess, yeah, but she said a god. Oh, all right. Sorry, a goddess, yeah. Because your courage is what makes you a goddess. And you are already better than any god or goddess we already have.
Thank
really?
You so much. I need to say you that I was not prepared for speak that. Also, only I read a little of this. On this that I say now is for inside me.
It's amazing. Really. Yes, it's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Really.
No problem. It's okay.
So we will hear actually from Safe Place International right now, Rachel Leclerc, the CEO of Safe Place International. And we're back in a few minutes.
The LGBTQI+ community fights for space in this world. Space to live safely, to love freely, to be authentically. But for all the progress we've made, we're moving backwards. Today, we see radical legislation, homophobia, and an emboldened culture of bias in countries around the world. For queer persons, the simple act of living puts them at risk. There is a global community of displaced, marginalized people whose lives must be protected, their humanity affirmed, not only because it's just, but because the world is better for it. Our institutions and communities are calling out for their perspectives and visions for change. At Safe Place International, we believe that centering and amplifying the voices of marginalized communities is necessary to build a world that's safer, more inclusive, and filled with joy. To do so, we cultivate ecosystems of safety, healing, and collective growth with and for an intersectional community of LGBTQI+ displaced persons to affirm the leaders that only they can be. Wherever they are in the world, wherever they are in their journey, the path forward looks different for everyone. So we meet people on their terms, from standing up community centers in cities to reaching remote areas through technology. From welcoming someone who was recently displaced to supporting them as their goals change. At every step, we work together with kindness and generosity to ensure that everyone in our community feels connected, seen, and understood. The core of our work centers on equipping our community members to find their purpose and thrive in their new environments. But we know that can't happen without a foundation of safety and stability. We work side by side with global and local partners to protect people with access to safe housing, food, supplies, and critical information. When there's a need, we rise to meet it, every time. From there, we can look to the future. The Dream Academy, our 10-week intensive virtual course, focuses on leadership development, socio-emotional learning, and job skills training. Led by members of the LGBTQI+ refugee community and available in 2 languages, the Dream Academy connects participants to purpose, power, and the new possibilities they need to heal from individual and collective traumas. And those experiences at the Dream Academy make a lifetime of difference. Grounded in their purpose, our community members embark on their own paths. They find transformative opportunities and assume roles of power and influence in their institutions and communities, uplifting the people and spaces around them. Whatever path they take or make, they pave the way to acceptance and celebration for the generations that follow. The world is made better by their voices, their dreams, and their joy. And we've only just begun.
Welcome to this second part of this amazing episode. Julie, I would like to stay in Cuba a little bit. And when we talk about Cuba, we have to say Fidel Castro. So in his autobiography, My Life, he criticized his ways of dealing with homosexuality there, and he admitted his guilt. Do you think this helped a lot the other politicians to learn from his mistakes and do something and help?
Okay, thank you so much again. I think I will tell you the truth about what I feel about Fidel Castro and what feel the most of the Cuban society. My family in general loved Fidel Castro for the idea, for the strong character. But the problem with Fidel Castro was that he don't accept black and homosexual. It's not a secret that in 19 years, many homosexuals tried to go to America because not find a space in the Cuban society. For this way, the communism, I think, is not good for the people that try to change the gender identity. And Fidel Castro, I don't have a good opinion about the politician that dirigen el país.
That rule the country.
Mm-hmm. That rule the countries, because we don't have voice in Cuba. In general, the community, we don't have voice. And it's very, very bad. Fidel Castro was died many years, and after that was the president, the brother of Fidel Castro, Raúl Castro. The brother of Fidel Castro was more military, so the ideas for military, and was more strong in the laws for the homosexual, for the trans in general. When the trans make some crimes, cut the hair, go directly in men's jails with men all together. No respect when the trans have HIV and put all together. It was really, really, really dangerous. And the police, of course, is instrument for the society, for attack the society. So Cuba is not like Venezuela, that the people have the power. No, in Cuba, the police had the power. The police agreed the person, the police make violence, and all for the politician that make the rules of the country. For the people that have normal sexuality, also heterosexual, it is very, very bad to live in Cuba. That's why they tried to leave the country. It's not a secret that America is only 180 kilometers from Cuba. Many Cubans died on the sea trying to go to America, to Florida, for the American dreams, and also for have a more better quality of life, because in Cuba it's not possible. It is really funny because the American people can go to Cuba, enjoy the country, and make vacation, and the Cuban people can go. And it's only 180 kilometers from Varadero to Key West. This is the human society, but we don't understand. They speak about embargo and embargo?
Block.
Block. They speak about the block in 1961, but the most product in Cuba that we have in this moment, I am out from Cuba 5 years, it was from America. In the borders of the sea, that America and Cuba, there are a big mafia between the police that protect the sea from America and from Cuba. There are a big mafia, and you pay and you can have the right to go safe to Key West, American territory.
I'm gonna move now towards Europe, towards your presence and more on your presence. So in Safe Place International, you work with many transgender people. How many of transgender people here in Greece are actually sex workers? And is this usually by choice, or is this the situation that pushes people this direction?
So, first of all, I would say it really depends. We have many transgender members that, as Julie was saying, they don't want to work in sex working and they are forced to do it somehow. And some that do want. It's true that for refugees and migrants, normally sex working is more a way of survival than an option. But it's true that we have many trans women, concretely from Greece, that it's actually an option. They decide to do it when they were young, and now it's their way of living, and what they are doing now, it's advocacy. Sex working and advocacy for sex workers. Regarding refugees and migrants that are transgender, we have cases of people that started doing, as Julie was explaining, started doing sex working in their home country somehow. Some people that started doing on the trip to Greece, and some people that started doing sex working here in Greece. When we have members that started doing sex working in their country, it's true that maybe they understand because of society and because of the stigma. For example, from Cuba, we have examples that they started doing sex working in Cuba. They understand that this is, unfortunately, the way of survival due to not being accepted. Actually, we have cases of trans members that they were explaining us that the police was arresting them because of fake identity, because they were saying that they're women and they're men on their ID, so they could get arrested because of fake identity. And they also assume many times as a prevention that trans members could get arrested in Cuba concretely, but also in other countries in Latin America. They could get arrested because if you're trans, it's pretty much possible that you're a sex worker, and sex working is illegal in Cuba. Mm-hmm. So many times, many Cuban transgender were arrested, not even doing sex working, but because you need to change your habits in order to continue living in the country. And at the same time, they couldn't change their habits because most of the members we have, they tried to find another job, and they were, like, we have people that wanted to go to university, and as Julie was saying, they had to cut their hair, they had to come as a boy, etc. So it's a double blade. At the first, they are telling you that you can't do sex working because it's illegal, but at the same time, society doesn't leave you another option. So for members that started with sex working in their country, it's true that a lot of them during the trip, they had to do sex working in order to get to their destination. As Julie was saying, it is not normally Greece. They get stuck in Greece. But we also have people that had to do sex working. Concretely, I would say the main point would be Turkey and Greece. The worst stories of transgender people that had to do sex working is in Greece. There's yes, and I think it's important to say this because it's completely hidden. There's a huge, not only mafia, but selling of illegal hormones at the same time. A lot of trans people, they start taking hormones in Turkey because there's a huge community of trans people from a lot of different countries. Normally, Cubans go, as Julie was saying, through Russia and Serbia, but there's a lot of trans members from other Arabic-speaking and Farsi-speaking countries that stay there in Turkey. No one asks for asylum there, but they stay a long time there. And the stories regarding sex working in Turkey are pretty serious. We have cases of people that were not diagnosed, but after dealing, talking about it, they were probably transmitted either HIV or other STI in Turkey because of rape, because of unprotected sex that they were obligated to do. And we also have sex working, of course, in Greece. Regarding Greece, I have to say that it's not illegal to be a sex worker, but the requirements in order to be a legal sex worker are almost impossible, even for Greek nationals.
So let's unpack it. So what does it take to be a legal sex worker in Greece? Because as you say, by law, it is legal, and we have this red district not even far from our lab, but there are many sex workers on the streets. We see them all the time, right?
So first of all, you need to have, for refugees, you need to be a recognized refugee. You need to have a resident permit, meaning if you're an asylum seeker, you can't be a sex worker. Of course, if you're undocumented, there's no point. If you're a Greek national, you already have ID. So this is like the first requirement. Then the requirements are pretty hard. First of all, it's only legal to do sex working in brothels, in places, which means you can't do it neither in the street nor in your house, nor in escort services like cars going to the clients' houses, hotels. This is illegal. As you were saying, and just for you to know, legally in Athens, there's not one legal brother. So all the brothers that we're seeing here are illegal. But everyone knows, as you can see. In Attiki, in the region, there are some. There are in Thessaloniki, there are 33 brothels legal. But here in Athens, we see the situation. We see Metaxurgio and we see the Phyllis Street. None of them are legal. Then other requirements would be like being, of course, more than 18 years old. Before, you needed to be a woman. When I say this, I mean female ID. But this changed. The law comes from 1999, actually. Until 2017, I think it's important to say that the only way to change your papers, meaning name, maybe surname and gender identity, was by doing the sex reassignment surgery. So until 2017 in Greece, you needed to do the sex reassignment surgery in order to change your papers.
Okay.
When they changed this law in 2017, they also changed the law for sex workers, and now you can be a male or female ID. Talking specifically about trans women, that they didn't have the opportunity to change their gender, so they can also do sex working legally. This was the idea. At the same time, you cannot, as I was saying, you can't do it in the streets. In brothels, they can't be two at the same time, so you can only have two people in the brothel, and they need to be normally one in the morning, one in the afternoon. They can't be together.
What do you mean two? I don't understand.
Sorry?
What do you mean two people? It has to be only two people.
So in the brothel,
yeah.
In each brothel, you can only have hired with a permit two sex workers legally.
Okay.
And they can't be at the same time in the place. Even though you have two different rooms, there's no possible.
Okay.
You can't have an STI, which is a big one, because, of course, if you're taking a treatment for HIV, you get to a point that you can't transmit HIV. If you take a therapy for hepatitis, maybe you can still be positive because it's, as we say, it's sleeping in your liver, but you are not, you can't transmit. If you have an STI, you can't work as a sex worker. You can't be married, which is a big one, because we have many sex workers, male and female, that are married. The couple knows, and they, because of their situation, they have to do sex working. And you can't have any mental illness. So you have to pass through a psychiatrist in order to start being a sex worker. For sure, you have to go to hospital. You have to renew this permit every 3 years. And also, you should take every 15 days a test for STIs on a public hospital. So disclosing it, most of the sex workers, all of the sex workers that I worked, at least, from Red Umbrella, actually, which is from Positive Voices, the social center for for sex workers, none of the sex workers are legal. Either migrants, either refugees, either Greek locals.
They have to pay for the license?
They have to pay a small fee,
okay,
to be honest, but the thing is, like, it's difficult for them to get, as far as I know, it's difficult for them to get this supposed test that they have to do. But for example, in Red Umbrella, the tests and the certificate that we do, it's also legally, they can actually use it in order to explain to the government that they are official sex workers. It's not about paying, but for example, we only do 4 tests, which means that all the other tests, they can only do it in a private clinic. If we're talking normally refugee sex workers, most of them don't have papers. So any kind of requirements, the ones we're talking about, could be from a hospital, could be asylum, all of them, they have to pay by their own. Mm-hmm. They don't have a PIPE or an AMCA, so they can't access to anything. We give some services, but they are for specific STIs. We also have a lawyer specialized on sex working. But there are many things that they have to pay for themselves. There's no PrEP available, for example. I think it's a very topic in Greece. It's one of the least countries in Europe that PrEP is not available. So what we do is, for example, we have some contacts and legally they buy it. But as you can imagine, the only risk population that it's able to actually buy PrEP because it's expensive is as our sex workers. Any kind of other community, from refugees, migrants to drug users, they don't have the capacity to buy it because it's pretty expensive.
Julie, I want to go back to you. So there are many issues related to your work, many dangers. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the hate crime that is happening towards transgender people here in Greece. Actually, I'm curious if you experienced more of it in Cuba or in Greece, and how does it look like?
Okay, I can say that in Cuba and in Greece is the same. Little more here in Greece because we have many different cultures. Here you can see Muslim, here you can see person with other religion that really don't understand about the trans and attack on the street. For example, like Moran explained, we are exposed. The trans woman that makes sex worker on the street, we are more the exposed every night to be attacked for the hate crimes. For example, in my position, I need to go every night on the street because I don't like to make online. It's the other possibility that we have. But you never know. Many times come a group of person that attack. Many Arabic, I can say Arabic or Muslim, I don't know exactly from where nationality are, but I know there are many countries that no understand, no accept the trans, because I know all many trans here in Greece, of course, from other countries, from Pakistan, from India, and in the country is not allowed to be trans. And when you expose every night on the street, the people know you, I feel here more the hate crimes like in Cuba, because Cuba, of course, is my language, is my culture. I know what can I do. I know what where can I go. But here, when something happened, I don't know where can I go. I know many organizations that, of course, in my case, I have protection. I can go in Red Umbrella, in Safe Place, and explain what it's happened. But in the case that you suffer from one attack, that it's happened many times on the street, I don't know what can I make, where can I go? Also,
Would police react to situations like this?
Since here in Greece, the police, when we are working on the street, they don't say that you can do it, but they don't protect us on the street. You know, many times attack the trans, that we are exposed for these hate crimes, and the police never come, you know? Many times there are big fights, and never you see the police. And maybe it's not like in Cuba, when you go to the police station and you try to explain something that it's happened, they don't put the most strong attention. I can't say that because many times I go with friends in the police station because suffer from attack for aggression. And okay, they make because they need to make and they need to hear. It's the protocol. But you can see it's not this attention, this helpful. Many times I saw that. But in general, the police don't affect us like a trans sex worker on the street, but also no protect. It's these two combination.
Warren, can I ask you just for a very quick follow-up? Because you work not only with transgender people, you work also with gay people, right? Do they face the same danger, or is the sex work on the street the main factor of being at risk and being in a community that is most discriminated?
Do you mean hate crimes or sex work in concrete? Hate crimes in
general?
Yes,
so my question is, the hate crimes, are they directed towards transgender people or towards sex workers? I know that the combination of two is probably the strongest, but...
black is...
And, yeah.
Nice. So basically what Julia made many times is explained that this is super intersectional. And unfortunately, we can't talk about one discrimination. Right, like what we experienced and how we try to support is like it's never you are a sex worker or you are a drug user or you are a refugee or you are from this country. It's like several variables that get together, and the discrimination you get actually, unfortunately, comes from different sides. So, for example, one example could be a trans member that because of being trans, they had to be sex worker. They didn't want to be sex workers, so they start taking drugs for it, and they start getting into chemsex, which is another world, and it's being a thing right now in Greece.
Chemsex?
Chemsex, it's like, it's not even related to sex worker only. It's like specific parties, which are more private. It's not brothers, it's not sex working. It's like, it could be in an apartment, it could be someone Greek from 55 years old. They are related to the LGBTQI+ community, but not only. And it's three specific drugs that the effect that they make is like you are super horny, yes, and you can last a long time without sleeping. So like it's, I mean, the basic would be, for example, three days with the door open in a place, and everyone is having sex in a way and taking drugs at the same time. These drugs are related to pipes, for example, which there's also a way of transmission. So we have a lot of members that is a specific drugs, and it's a specific thing that is going on in Europe right now. One of the drugs, it's crystal meth, which is all around Athens right now, with shisha, which would be the other one. But crystal meth, the thing is like the way of taking it, it's easy the transmission. So even if it's not transmission, we're talking, as I was saying, like a sex worker that maybe has to do chemsex. Also the fact that chemsex means that you're taking drugs because of your work, not because of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
maybe it can go to pleasure because of, you know, not controlling anymore when are you taking. But the idea of chemsex, there are communities of chemsex that do it because they want to, but in sex working communities, normally in order to do their job, they have to take drugs. Many times the clients offer this drug and say like, hey, I can pay you a little bit more if we take drugs together. So we can be talking about black community, at the same trans, sex, working, drug users. So it's so the discrimination, it's so variable that it's never one discrimination against you. It's different hate crimes. For sure, as you were saying, the transgender community in the streets specifically, they could have more issues. For example, in refugee camps, one of our policies is that no trans community can go to refugee camps. As far as we know, for the Attiki ones, we're trying it. Unfortunately and horribly saying this, when you're cisgender, meaning like you are okay with the gender they assigned you when you were born, you can, horribly saying this, you can hide your sexual orientation in order not to be attacked in the camp. When you're trans, this is more difficult, mm-hmm. especially if you started your transition somehow. So within the authorities, but as Julie was saying, within the refugee community many times, these people receive more hate crimes than the rest. Just, I would say, the difference is the appearance.
I want to say something that he, sorry for this tour, that he say is very important to know that in my case, for example, I don't do any drugs. Never in my life I made any drugs. I don't like it, but I don't criticize the people that make it, because, for example, in my community, all the trans that don't have documents that need support, they need to be strong for affront this situation. And the only way that they have is to make drugs, because they find the connection between sex and drugs. Because maybe the person seeing that make sex for take money is easy, but it's not easy. Because never you know who is the customer or what want the customer. This is the most bad combination. I have a good friend that in this moment had many problems with the drug, and in the mind is connected that without drug he can make the sex worker. I tried to explain, I tried to speak with him, please, it's not like this, you need to go to the doctor, but no one to assist doctor, because for the stigma, for the color, for the gender, is many taboos. This is very bad, because you start for the nose and after you finish for the here.
Moran, you mentioned some issues with the HIV positive refugees in Greece. I would like to ask about the medical care they take, because, you know, sometimes you are an asylum seeker and then you are a refugee. Is there a difference in the medical care?
So if you didn't get registered for the asylum or you got your two rejections, you can't access to therapy.
Nothing.
I'm not only talking about HIV, which there was a change right now, but I'm talking about any kind of STI. So the three main ones that we help with are HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C, because they're chronic, because it's for a long time. It's not like there's a therapy and it's gone. It's a therapy for all your life or for several years at least. So you need to have in your asylum seeker card, there's a number which is called PIPA, which is the social security number, but it's provisional, which means that if you don't get your papers and you don't transform it into an AMCA, an actual AMCA, the social security number in Greece, that PIPA gets deactivated, inactive at some point.
So, you get nothing, right?
So the thing is, if a member comes when they didn't still register for the asylum, living with HIV either got diagnosed in their country and they come to us, because when we started Ref Checkpoint, we realized how many, by mouth to mouth, a lot of people started coming that they were diagnosed in their country. They saw that we were helping and they were disclosing the information without needing to take the test. Either like this or like taking the test there and giving the information there, which was also a psychosocial part of it, like giving this information. If they didn't register for asylum, what we do is like we help them register to the asylum as fast as possible because they need to get treatment. It's not only the asylum, it's the health part. And when they get the PIPA, they get the therapy. If there's a second rejection, their PIPA gets deactivated. And if an organization can't help you with the advocacy part, if you are an individual alone, your PIPA gets deactivated and the doctor can't give you, like they can, even though we know the doctors and they're nice, there was a change on the law in April and everything got electronically. So before, doctors were giving prescriptions with paper. Now they have to put it on the computer. So if you don't have an active PIPA, even if they want to give you therapy, they can't. What happened with registered people is that two times for now, the electronic platform was dismantled. Meaning like in the past, you should have to go to a reception center to ask for asylum. They changed that and now you can do it electronically with your phone. Like you and me can ask for asylum right now. It's as easy as that. This platform closed many times with a 404 error, I'm talking. Like you click and it was error. So there were many people that were diagnosed in their country. We wanted to help them, but we couldn't register them in the asylum, which from international law, there are so many legal things on that. You have the right to ask for asylum and you have the right for therapy. So the only solution they gave us at that point was you can send an email and say how vulnerable is the case. Because supposedly in the list of vulnerabilities of the asylum, living with HIV is one of them, which means you have a little bit better treatment. LGBTQI plus or being trans is not, by the way. So living with HIV, minors unaccompanied, single moms, it's a group of people. So for these people, what happened is that we had to do kind of a specific advocacy because two of these cases were in AIDS state, meaning like they had enough, they have enough number of CD4 or immunological system that they could die tomorrow. So we had to do a case to the ministry. Thanks, because the good thing about Positive Voice is a Greek organization, so we have contacts inside the Greek, not government, of course, but like the Greek system, let's say. And what we did basically send these case studies and say, like, listen, these people want to ask for asylum. They want to become refugees. They don't want to be illegal in this country. They also want to get a therapy. They are, we talked about some medical stuff regarding why they were on AIDS state. And it's not that they don't have a date. It's just that for all organizations, it's going to be like, it was like this. The platform was closed and there was not a date to get open. It was just closed. Maybe it could be 2 months, 3 months, 1 year. We didn't know. So with the efforts and these case studies that we sent, it changed the law, kind of. And now there's a specific number called PAMCA, which was created for the COVID vaccine. So for HIV treatment, there was never this option, but for undocumented people that wanted to take the COVID vaccine, they made a specific number, which is PAMCA, provisional AMCA, which was only to take the vaccine. We made it happen in order for this same PAMCA to work for HIV therapy. And the only thing you need to get this number is your passport. So you don't need any Greek document. So it's kind of a success in the middle of non-success at all. But right now, people that are not registered or that have two rejections or that they don't have any kind of contact right now with the asylum service, with their passport or a photocopy of their passport, they can go to a KEP, to the citizen office in Athens. They can get a PAMCA. They don't have to explain to the KEP where they're getting the PAMCA, because many times this happened. They were like, you can't get HIV therapy with the PAMCA. And it's like, don't even tell them that. Just tell them that you're taking the vaccine. Because you don't have to ask to this officer what you're going to do. You just need the number. The doctor is the one that knows that with this number you can take therapy. Therapy for HIV, not hepatitis B, not hepatitis C. We have many members that they are okay in this country, if I can say it somehow, but they are planning to leave because they realize that they're never going to get therapy for hepatitis. And this changed, this didn't change because hepatitis takes more time. We're not talking about AIDS. There's not so much stigma. It's more hidden. So we have many members with hepatitis that even though we get them against in the process and reasylum and everything, it gets super complicated. And it's a year. It's a chronic disease, which means like they are not getting symptoms tomorrow, but they realize that they want to have a life in a place where they're never going to get the therapy. So they decide to leave just because of that, which is the last thing. We have to understand that refugees are not only leaving their countries because of social conditions or because of war or because of a conflict, let's say. They also leave their countries because of the sexual orientation. They also leave their countries because of the gender identity. And they also leave the country sometimes because of a medical condition that they know they can't receive treatment in their countries. And many countries, we have people living with HIV that disclose this information. And when you ask them, why do you leave your country? When I do interview preparations, which is one of the things I do for these communities concretely, they tell me like they have many, but the first one, it was, I'm living with HIV, and in my country, there's no treatment for HIV. There's of course a stigma, there's of course discrimination, but there's no medication in my country. I know enough about HIV to know that if I don't take medication, at some point I'm gonna die. Mm-hmm. So I left my country because of this.
But the sorry for interrupting, but the fact that in your country there is no medication for HIV is not a reason itself for asylum, right? Mm-hmm. To receive asylum. So being a transgender or homosexual person is, but if you are discriminated in your country.
It's not even. Mm-hmm. It's not even. In the asylum system, this is the way we do interview preparations. As I said, like, it's not a vulnerability to be LGBTQI+. It is a vulnerability to be living with HIV. Vulnerabilities are one thing. Reasons for leaving your country, it's another one. So, for example, Cuba is a good example because, as Julie was saying, most people see Cuba as a paradise. Actually, they just created an LGBTQI+ hotel in Havana. So we are super happy for Julie, of course, but we have many Cuban members that were rejected their asylum. Because what they do, what the asylum does with specifically someone LGBTQI+, is they search about information on the country, right? On the internet, on news. Mm-hmm. So if you search on news, it's true that the HIV medication thing is starting to be in a lot of places, that there's no medication for many people. But the LGBTQI+ question is much different because with this shelter, for example, there's an organization that works with LGBTQI+ people, supposedly is not illegal. Like, there are many things that when we hear the stories have nothing to do, police torture, of course. So many of the rejections that they got is because of non-based, because what they tell have nothing to do with what the news said.
And Julie, I'm going to turn to you because one thing that is very curious to me, if there are so many issues of getting medicine, I'm only assuming that hormonal therapy is even harder to get here. You started your hormonal therapy back in Cuba and finished here?
In Cuba, I take hormone therapy for myself. I never go to the hospital. I never spoke with the doctor. And here in Greece, I make him right with right hospital, with right doctor to make the hormone therapy. But in my case, I have a lot of questions in my mind, what will affect, because I don't know. In Cuba, when I take hormone for myself, affected a lot of my organize my body, but here I am very controlled for the hospital. I go to Helena's hospital. I have file there, and because in the border when I try to cross the border, the police get in me and push me on my implant. Silicone is broke. But for a start the hormone therapy, I need to change first the implant, and after I can start the hormone therapy. But the problem is that the Greek government with my document covered only the surgery, open and clean, but not put renew. And I don't want that. That's why I am try to keep in and to make in private hospital this surgery, because it's a lot of important for me. But this aesthetic kind of surgery, they don't make for me here. It's a little complicated. But for the hormone therapy, here is 100% better than in Cuba.
Is it paid by the government or is it a private expense, the hormone therapy?
This is for public.
It's you need to pay a small fee. Mm-hmm. If, again, as with the therapy, if you have PIPA or AMCA, you need to pay like a 20 euros fee. Mm-hmm. And then it's free as long as you have a PIPA. So it's basically the same idea. But it's true that the process, that how it works is like, first of all, any certificate from another country, they don't accept it. Like we have one, I can remember now one trans man from Iran that had a certificate of sex reassignment surgery and a certificate of taking hormones, and Greece didn't recognize it, and it was in English. So they need to first, if they took hormones in the past, to go to endocrinologist to make sure that everything is okay right now. And then they should go to a psychiatrist from 6 to 12 months. And the certificate needs to be from a psychiatrist, and then they can start the hormone therapy.
I made this process that he told with the psychiatrist, but it's a little stress because you need to wait 12 months, 1 year, for take the decision for the psychiatrist. I have the decision for the psychiatrist. I can stay, but But in my case, I need to change first the implant to start the hormone therapy because it's very important. Because in my community, when I try to speak with the other trans, not all the trans, we are lucky that we can look like women. That is the real purpose for take hormone, is to try look like woman. Because you need to affront the society at day, at night. It's not my problem in this moment, okay? 24 hours, I am like this. I don't have problem with the person at day. Because maybe they know or they don't know if I am or no I am. But other trans have many problems because they feel woman, but they don't look like woman. They need to make the hormone therapy. It's really dangerous. And many times I saw on the street at day that the people make rejection, humiliation, make distance, because see like different. For me, it's normal. I understand that they feel woman, but they don't look like woman. But it's not problem for you. Make discrimination, but it's really complicated here in Greece because Greece is conservative, Christian is.
But still, the fact that the government, the state pays for the hormonal therapy is quite a lot. There are not that many countries in Europe even that pay for it. It's usually the more conservative countries, of course. They never do. I mean, in my country, in Poland, I cannot imagine this. This would be a revolution in my country that the state pays for it. There was a legal battle for paying for in vitro, and they lost it. It was just for a very short period of time that it was co-financed by the state. Now only the more progressive cities pay part of it to their citizens. But like, you know, if in vitro is not financed, then I cannot even imagine the hormonal therapy.
But the hormone therapy is not something difficult medicament. This is the normal medicament that take the women, and only you need to change. I don't know exactly about that, but I take many hormones for myself in my life without doctor, without nothing. This is only one medicament that you can take in the pharmacy, but here is more regulado y controlado.
Regulated
and controlled for the doctor. It's only this.
Also, I'd say, and this is from experience I got in Red Umbrella, like the movement for the trans community in Greece was huge at some point. I don't know if it could get addressed, the fact of having this right now regarding hormones that is not in every European Union country, but definitely. When I talk to trans women, trans women sex workers from 55 years up, Greek, how they talked to us about a lot of killings in Greece. They were going against the police to shout for their rights. The police was putting them in prison. Some of them are still in prison. Like, we also have a service of going to prisons with psychosocial support and sex prevention for trans people that maybe they are there for 15 years there. So the movement of trans community, I think, in Greece is like from the long. And I think everyone that lives in Greece know that it's a country pretty revolutionary in the sense of like when something is wrong, they're going to fight back. And maybe it could be a reason why this hormone procedure, they decided to leave it, because it's not so difficult for the government to regulate this. And also, it's true that it's possible, but at the same time, For refugees concretely, if you were following your hormone procedure, imagine like you have a prescription from your doctor and you arrive in Greece, you can't follow your treatment. You have to wait 1 year, even though you say, I've been taking hormones for 5 years, I have the document and I can continue taking them tomorrow, because it's dangerous for someone to stop taking hormones and start again. The Greek government would say, no, you have to wait 12 months. We don't care about this certificate. So it's true that it's possible, but at the same time, there's a lot to do, and it's a little bit more hidden maybe than Poland in that sense, but also it's dangerous for the health, the way it's done for refugees and yeah, refugees or asylum seekers.
And the one point, sorry for that he say is very important to know that many trans take hormone not only for take this appearance for women. Also, at the end, when you make the hormone therapy, you need to decide if really you feel woman want to make the surgery at the end, or only you want to have this woman feel. But this is a very complicated process with the doctor, psychiatrist. That's why it's my long time.
Julie, how does it feel that you have to prove to these people in the asylum that you are trans? And what about the other people that they didn't do the operation, but they want to get asylum for this? How does it feel for them that they have to prove?
My body? In my case, when I made the asylum interview, was really hard. The person that made for me all the questions was a professional person that had a lot of experience. It was making very good. But the questions was very, very hard. I need to convince him that I had afraid, I don't want to come back to my country, but my body was the result of this. Because, for example, if you see my mastography ultrasound, mm-hmm. you can see that all my body implant is broke, that I don't make in one hospital, that I make in my house. When you see my incision for the breast, you can see that it was not a plastic surgery. When you see my oil that I put in my body, you can see that it was not a professional. My body or my figure was the proof for this person that, of course, my history.
To wrap up, Moran, you mentioned several changes in legislation when it comes to transgender people, transgender refugees in Greece. In general, is it going the good direction? Are there any improvements?
So, I think it's extremely dynamic, and my answer now could change tomorrow. What I can say is that in the past months, everything has gone for worse. The fact of not understanding that it's a vulnerability, the fact of getting people asset on, for example, in the housing program that existed in the past of SD or other services just by their ID and not by their gender expression, meaning like they would put a trans woman with six straight men just because they're from the same country and it's just male. Mm-hmm. This still happens right now with many services. As Julie was saying, when you need to get hospitalized, there's not like they don't know what to do with you. We had this case, so they don't know what to do with you. It's like, okay, so we put them there, and it's like, it should be like, it's true that not only us but many organizations are doing trainings, but in the asylum service concretely, I'm not gonna go about society because I think it's too much. But against with asylum service, it's not working. Many organizations do trainings to the officers to understand that, as I was saying, there it could be the only reason to leave your country could be your gender identity, and there are some questions that you can't ask to them. And there's, for example, the victim of torture. There is an organization that did, if you were a victim of torture, there was a whole process, you will get a certificate. If the asylum service gets a certificate, they can't ask through that specific experience, they have to already believe it. So with the LGBTQI+, there's no this. We have people, we have trans women that have families, because they had to have a family in their countries. They're saying like, but are you trans really? Why do you have a family? Mm-hmm. We have also, when did you decide to become a woman? As a question. We have also, if someone says they're bisexual, many questions like how many women you were with and how many men you were with, and maybe you were with one man and five women, and like, you're just confused. So this, we're getting it every day, like with a lot of cases. So in the question concretely of LGBTQI+, and for sure trans community, the effort is there, because I can say at least three trainings that happen. But if the person, if the officers, I'm going to say, and sometimes the interpreters are not prepared, sometimes the interpreters are not comfortable. Like before having an interview with a trans person, you have to make sure that the interpreter is going to feel comfortable talking about many things. And sometimes the rejections get there because the interpreter didn't use the words. Didn't use a specific words. They don't want to talk about hormone therapy. They don't want to talk about basically the story of Julie, for example. We can imagine an interpreter that is not feeling comfortable because either their cultural background or they don't want to do it, and nobody told them that Julie is Julie. Why? Because if you're an asylum seeker, you can't change your papers. So they don't know that Julie is Julie and is trans woman. They know one name and it's male. So maybe they come with a man. So imagine being a trans woman and having a male officer and a male interpreter maybe from your country, and you have to tell your story as a trans, and they don't even understand half of what you're saying. So if you say anything wrong or anything that has no sense with what they see in the internet with your country, they're going to reject you. And it's super difficult to appeal that, because as I said, there's no, because of terrorism or war or militias, no, it's super personal way of asking. In that sense, in the asylum service, I think it's going for worse. We're seeing the situations that are happening right now. We see that camps are getting full, and we have many cases of LGBTQIA plus people that are in the refugee camps that want to leave because they don't feel safe and they don't have nowhere to go. So it's not going in the right direction, definitely. And yeah, I think that's my answer.
And I want to agree that he said that in my case, it was not easy. But when I came here, after that I was out from the psychiatric hospital, I immediately started to integrate in the Greek society. I was in the Greek school, I work in many organizations, and this is something that helped for the asylum. When I started the hormone therapy, I was with in therapy with 1 year with the psychiatrist. I have the paper for the psychiatrist that I am apt for, made the surgery, that I am trans woman. This also helped for the asylum. But the person that made the questions for me, of course, when I was, because my appointment for the interview was changing many times, they know all about me, because for my history, I was totally integrated in the Greek society. Was many things that I don't want to speak very deep, but he knows about that. It's only because, for example, that I was retaining one burdel when I came here, when I have the proof. They know some person that go specific like a trans, and they have the capacity, in my case, like the way to speak, but not feel me bad, because he knows how he can do. And the most important was that the interpreter was online, and I understand Greek and Spanish, and it was good. Many times in the interview it happened, it lasts 5 hours. Many times I can't speak more because it was too much, because I had the flashback. I don't know if you know what is flashback. It was terrible. I need to stop, I need to take breaths, but it's happened.
Guys, you're shining so much light on the situation for us right now, for our listeners, for sure. And I want to thank you very much for coming here, for being very open about the situation, because I believe that if people hear from people with the experience from the community and the experts who are working with the community, that's the most powerful thing we can do here with the podcast. So thank you very much for being our guests. And I actually would already like to invite you for a follow-up episode, because yes, I think there are so many more things so we could be talking about.
I can say dance twerk. If you want, I can teach you.
Okay. Oh. That's interesting. That would be interesting, huh? Maybe this would increase our viewership.
Yes.
We're strategizing with some marketing people, you know? Like, why? Why? If we can have you. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the whole crew, to our citizen journalists, as always, for doing an amazing job of recording, producing, brainstorming on this episode. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
See you. Bye.
How old are you?
Oh.
I know. Like, but come on. It's out of curiosity, because
how
I wouldn't be able.
How young are you?
How young are you? We met at the border, at the fence between Serbia and Hungary. I worked there. He was doing a journalistic project. You know, okay. He came. One clean man on this border. White T-shirt. You know, I was like, damn it.
I was waiting for the Greek love, but now I delete Greek love. And I am open for all different love for all different culture. I don't know what it's happening.
Of course.
A lot of drama. Yeah.
Yes.
I know.
Potentially.
I know.
You have experience as well.
I have experience.
You didn't tell
I have trauma.
Us.
Yeah. Oh, the same thing. Like my husband, he's just coming home. He's like, hot dogs, burgers, proper American dinner. You know? I was like,
I never eat any of these things. I never eat any of these things.